Hello again and welcome to Worship Life with Mike Harlan, coming to you from the beautiful and historic B.B. McKinney Studios, downtown Nashville, Tennessee. I'm just going to keep saying that until people believe it, Mike.
I'm just wondering if what B.B. would think about that if he was here.
He would be thrilled. That's what I'm going to say. Yes.
We'll continue, please.
All right. Yes. Well, I'm here as always. That voice you just heard was the voice of Mike Harlan, and I'll wait while Mike gets his reading glasses so we can continue. I like to tease my friend. He's only a couple of years older than me, but I use that to my advantage every chance I get. Mike, we've done several of these podcasts now. Last time we talked about multi-generational worship. And this time we want to talk about something that I don't know we've seen enough of this to call it a trend yet, but there was a blog that Dr. Rayner did. Dr. Tom Rayner is our president. He hosts a podcast called Rayner on Leadership that a lot of people are tuned into. But Tom did a blog at his website, tomrayner.com, where he talked about something he's seeing in churches where they're moving away from multiple services with multiple worship styles to a single worship style for all services. So talk about that, Mike, if you would. Tell us, have you seen this happening in churches? Do you think it's a trend, and what do you think is significant there?
Well, first of all, Dr. Rayner, I don't know anybody that has his finger on the pulse of what's happening in more different kinds of churches than Tom Rayner. I mean, I don't say that just because he's our president. That was true before he came to Lifeway, and it's certainly still true. And of course, Lifeway Research has become the research arm of Lifeway that does a lot of this kind of research in churches. So he's a pretty reputable source on this kind of information. To be clear, he wasn't citing a particular research, but he was talking about something that he senses is happening.
Right.
And I think the blog name was Six Reasons Some Churches Are Moving Back to One Worship Style. And the blog that he sent on that, or wrote on that, was back in early part of March in 2015. And and boy, it got some responses. And my reaction to it, and my reaction at the time when I first saw that, is he's right about that. And my perspective of it is, again, not based on research, but based anecdotally on just the phone calls I have. Right. And believe it or not, I get 1 to 2, sometimes 3 or 4 phone calls every week from pastors. Now you think, why would a pastor call me? Well, in many of those settings, it would be a pastor of a church who they don't have a minister of music right now, or maybe they've never had one. Or a church that is going through a transition in leadership in their ministry, music ministry. And pastors will often want to go outside their church and outside their immediate scope of friends and just talk to an objective third party about some of these questions. And I get those phone calls. I imagine they might wonder, well, who's the guy at Lifeway? And they find out somehow what my name is, and they get my name. Sometimes, I'm grateful to say, Dr. Rayner will refer pastors to me, or maybe even Brad Wagner, even Eric Geiger, the other leaders here at Lifeway, will ask pastors to call me directly. And here's what I'm noticing for sure. I used to get the phone call, hey, how do we start a different service with a different style?
Right.
I don't ever get that phone call. I probably hadn't gotten that call one time in the last 3 years. Here's the call I get now. We've had multiple worship services for 10 years, and we want to put them back together in a single style. Wow. How do I do that? So my anecdotal observation is right in step with what Dr. Rayner has suspected in his blog he wrote on this subject last year, and that is churches are seeing the benefit of a single approach to worship ministry and are falling out of love, if you will, with the multi-styled worship approach.
Right, right. I heard one minister of music so frustrated with all of the different worship styles, nobody willing to sacrifice their desires for their neighbor next to them. And he suggested that he was going to hand out iPods to everybody and then just let everybody listen to whatever style of music they wanted for 20 minutes. Then he would get up and wave his hand and we would have the sermon. So yeah. Things thankfully haven't gotten quite that segregated. But talk about, from a biblical perspective, Mike, this idea of the stronger brother maybe laying aside his preference so that the weaker brother can be served.
Well, I think Paul has a lot to say on that subject. Mm. Two passages come to mind. The first one is 1 Corinthians 11. The big worship question that was erupting in 1 Corinthians 11 is whether or not a woman should have her head covered when she prayed in public worship.
Critical issue.
Critical issue.
Worship, yes.
That apparently at some point the church must have settled, because that doesn't seem to be an issue anymore.
At least not in the United States.
Yeah, yes, not here. But the more helpful passage that I've taught a lot on, and last time I taught this was just a couple of weeks ago in a church, and And teaching it again, I learned even more about this, this principle that Paul outlines in the 14th chapter of Romans. There were two critical worship questions that were happening to the church in Rome, and he addresses both of them in Romans 14. And here they are quickly. The first one was, whether or not you should eat meat. And, of course, the larger part of that question was meat offered to idols. Now, that actually appeared in a different passage, but in this passage in Romans 14, should you eat meat or not? And then the second question was, which day of the week was more special?
Right.
Some said this day, some said that day. Now, in the modern church, that's still a question mark. You think about it, there are denominations that right. disagree on that subject. Is Saturday, Sunday, can you have worship? Can you do Sabbath on Saturday night at 6 o'clock? I mean, there's still churches asking that question. But those two questions, Paul addresses them in Romans, and he comes away with this incredible statement that gives a lot of help in this subject of preferences and worship style. And here's what he said. He said, each one should be firmly convinced in their own heart. And he started the chapter by saying, let the mature among you give deference. He doesn't say it quite that explicitly, but here's the phrase he uses. And don't argue about doubtful issues. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think about a church life, think about the churches you've been part of, Brian, that faced what would qualify as a doubtful issue.
Sure.
One of those comes to mind is I saw one church one time that was struggling over whether the piano should be on the left side of the sanctuary or the right side of the sanctuary, and the organ be on the opposite side.
I think the Torah is very clear on that.
Well, exactly.
Manuscripts.
So I mean, think about it. I mean, I'm putting you on the spot here, but what's a doubtful issue that you've seen churches deal with?
I mean, I think our listeners probably could do better than I could, but carpet color,
yeah.
The number of people that should serve on a committee.
Oh, here's a big one. Are you ready for this one?
Yes.
Should the choir wear robes or not?
Oh, huge issue.
It's a huge issue. And
yes.
churches will fight over
yes.
these issues, and literally the fellowship is divided over an issue that's not clear cut in scripture. And I think that's the definition. A doubtful issue would be any issue of in the church where the scripture is not explicitly giving direction
right.
and that there's going to have to be a preference or a choice made by the leadership and by the people in that body of believers. And if it's not something that's clearly delineated in scripture, I think it would fall into the category of doubtful issues. And I don't know a single area in a church where that seems to happen more than in worship. A doubtful issue. And what Paul says in Romans 14 is that, brothers, don't argue about this. He goes on in the latter part of the chapter, and he actually stays on this subject for quite a while, and basically says this: don't let doubtful issues disrupt your unity, because the disunity of the church makes it not function in its Great Commission responsibility. It actually becomes a distraction to the gospel, not a proclamation of it. And churches actually diminish their influence by arguing over things that are doubtful. And worship and music style may be near the top of that list for many, many churches.
Mike, it seems to me like we've almost forgotten that what makes a song Christian is the lyric. That the music itself is agnostic, for lack of a better word. Many of these ancient hymns that we fight rightfully, I would say, because the theological value to sing in our churches, as you know, the tunes were not at all. They were
no.
secular tunes in so many cases. The
yeah.
the hymns that we've buried in our heart, we've buried the theology in our hearts. And it's great that the tunes are singable, but the tunes themselves aren't the point and never have been.
Yeah, they're only the setting. They're like the plate that the meal is served on. Is it important? Yes, it needs to be awesome, but it doesn't define the character and the value of it. The music, I would say, doesn't need to be a distraction to the truth of the song. It just needs to be something that actually helps communicate it, and artfully done. Music certainly has that power. As a matter of fact, I often say music is the most powerful discipleship tool God ever gave us, because we even teach the alphabet to our children with a melody.
Yes.
And music in and of itself, when it's married to truth, well, those are the things that people sing on their deathbeds. They're being reminded
yes.
of those truths, those things that were attached to melody that they've sung all of their lives. Well, when it goes back to multi-style worship, basically the premise of multi-style worship almost itself says that the body can't find agreement on this issue, and so we're going to divide it out and we're going to do multi approaches. Now, I would never say it's never appropriate to do that. I know some churches that have done a multi-styled worship approach well, but that's not, I would contend that's not the norm. And let me give you a few reasons why. When you see a multi music style approach in multiple worship services, almost in every case, you're going to have a winning and losing worship time. Mm-hmm. It's not always the contemporary service that wins either. I know churches right. that start that contemporary service and the traditional one grows, but the contemporary one struggles. And certainly the reverse of that is true as well. And over time, one of the services will begin to build momentum, and in many settings, the other service begins to struggle and begins to have difficulty. And there are a lot of reasons for that, one of which might be the musicians in that church may be better suited for one approach or the other. Sure. They might nail this approach, may be very, very average, or maybe even poor in the other approach, but it's the same musician. Mm. It might be even the same minister of music that's trying to plan both of those, and he may be awesome at one of them. He may not know what he's doing with the other one. So there's usually a winner and a loser. And then, as we talked about in our previous podcast, sometimes this approach isolates generations from each other, and the church begins to become fragmented and disunified, especially in the era when there's not a Sunday night service in many settings, and the church never worships together. As a matter of fact, what happens often in those churches is a guest literally will come up to the door, and they'll meet somebody in the parking lot they've never met before, the first time they've ever been at the church. Well, we're here for worship, and I've actually heard stories of the person saying, "Well, you don't want to go to that service. That's the dead service. You want to go to this service. That's the one that's really good." And on its face, if you think about that very long, something's wrong.
Yeah, I think we're worshiping the same God at both services.
I think so.
I think he's the audience.
And something's wrong when that happens. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it can be disruptive. And here's the last point I'll make. At this part is that over time, what pastors are telling me, and Dr. Rayner actually refers to this in his blog. Over time, the pastors are discovering that it's not growing their church, and it's actually fragmenting their congregation. And there's a negative that begins to emerge often in this model of ministry.
And it often is, you touched on it, Mike, it's often generational. I loved what you said about the idea God may have gifted your church in a certain way, your minister of music, your musicians, and maybe rather than focusing on our own preferences and what we enjoy, maybe we should focus on the way God has gifted the servants in our church. And maybe we should be able to focus on that and to be able to lean into those areas. When you were a younger worship leader, I know when I was a younger worship leader, which has been much more recently than when you were a younger worship leader. Just kidding you there. But I know I was often asked, probably just because I was young, "Brian, I need you to come into my church because we need to go contemporary. We've got to go contemporary." And so that's kind of how this started first, was starting these contemporary services. I know you've had that request a lot over the years. And how have you seen that turn out? When a church has decided for a stylistic reason, we're going to go contemporary, we're not growing, and we are, whatever the reason might have been. You've been a part of many, many churches like that. How have you found that?
Well, Brian, that's a big question in my story, what you just asked. And sometime, if one of our listeners are out there, come up and ask me to tell you this story, because it's much longer than I'll go into here. But I actually was foolish enough at one part of my ministry that I thought I could do that. I actually thought I could go to a church and just with my musical skill set and my people ability and my whatever, that I could go in and I could change the way those people worship. Well, I've got news for you. You can't do that. And I can't do that. And there's not a musician out there. Now, you might be able to perform music at a certain level or whatever, sure. But none of us have the power to change the way somebody worships. And what I had to learn the hard way is, as a worship pastor, I had to learn that my primary role was not to lead musically. My primary role was to lead spiritually.
Right.
And when I began to build a spiritual dynamic to my leadership, here's what I found. I loved all kinds of music myself. And when I began to lead spiritually, and I had the shepherding capability and relationship with the people I was leading, I could lead them in lots of styles of music.
Right.
And it didn't have to be identified by the copyright date or by whether or not it had drums. What I was trying to create was an atmosphere of response, whether we were singing Nearer My God to Thee or Our God is an Awesome God. I was reaching back a few years to get one that would have been new some time ago. And I found if I would lead spiritually and create an atmosphere of response and make worship the goal and not the style the point, that I could do any kind of music. And one Sunday could feel very contemporary. The very next Sunday could feel very traditional. And in many Sundays, an element of both. But the point was not the music itself. The point was the atmosphere of response to the Lord.
One of the things, Mike, I've heard you say as I've listened to you teach at various times to different groups, I've heard you say, who is it in your church that God didn't call you to serve?
Yeah.
Is there a segment, is there a style of music that people enjoy? You're not called to serve those people. God's called us to serve all people. Talk a little bit, if you would, in the few minutes we have left, about the importance of the relationship of the music minister and the pastor when it comes to this issue of worship style. As you know, those calls you and I got were often from pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And the pastor oftentimes will drive. A lot of times we'll drive as the shepherd what our musical styles are going to be. Are we going to have multiple services or one service and those kinds of things? So talk about how you've related to pastors over the years on this issue, maybe how you've seen it work well and not work as well.
Well, in the early days, when I hadn't lived quite enough years and not experienced enough heartache to know better, but I would actually have the attitude at times that if somebody didn't like what I was doing, tough. Mm-hmm. They can just get over it. If that demographic of our church was unconnected to what I'm doing, I felt no further obligation to lead them in any way. I'd had that dust off my shoes kind of mentality. And by the way, if you look at that teaching in context, it has nothing to do with worship style. So I think I was spiritualizing that text just a little bit. I began to realize that God made me a shepherd when I was as a worship leader, and my pastor needed me to think like a shepherd, and I didn't have the right to pick which sheep I was going to lead.
Amen.
And so as I got older, I realized that I needed to reach into those demographics in my church that maybe musically I did not directly connect with, and it was a stylistic issue. In those cases, I turned the pastoral skill on full blast to build relationships and trust. I would do something like this. I'd go into a senior adult class and teach them the new song that I was going to introduce 3 weeks from now.
That's really good.
And then when I introduced the new song in worship, the senior adults already knew it. And even I would even tell them, hey, and I need you guys to help me teach this to the rest of the church. You're already going to know it. I don't know. I wish I'd have learned some of those things earlier in life. But instead of seeing those outlying groups that maybe not resonated with everything I did, instead of seeing them as threats and as people to overcome, I saw them as the point to go after those people, to lead them spiritually, to be a shepherd to those people, and then build unity in the body around worship instead of disunity, which ultimately affects the impact of the church and the community. So I would say the best thing that a music leader can do is quit putting your eggs in the music style basket and put your energy and your focus in the connection spiritually and the pastoral connection you make with people, and lead people. Don't lead contemporary worship. Lead people and lead them where they are and take them to that place where they can engage with God. And if you can do that with excellence, and say that's the other thing I would say, no matter which style you do it great and go all the way there and make it excellent. And here's a phrase I used to use with people. Hey, if you can't believe in what I'm doing, believe in what I'm trying to do. And here's what I'm trying to do. And then have those conversations and cups of coffee where you begin to explain, here's what I'm trying to do, and here's why I'm approaching it the way I'm approaching it. And then build consensus and unity around worship, not around a style of music, but around worship itself. And let God do a lot of praying, for sure, but let God work. Well, through the worship of his people.
And that's a good way, I think, Mike, to talk to pastors about it as well, to just keep that relationship going. And even you're talking about saying that to different people segments in the church, you know, if you don't appreciate what I'm doing, appreciate what I'm trying to do. I think that's a great thing to say to a pastor. If you and your pastor are not on the same page, hey, pastor, I understand that you don't appreciate the way maybe I'm doing this right now, but here's what I'm trying to do. And I think if you and the pastor can get on the same page on what you're trying to accomplish, then it becomes easier to maybe work together on how to accomplish that. And you can explain, like you did, the importance of excellence. Well, Mike, we always like to remind our listeners out there that we want to pray for. And tell them ways that they can get their prayer request to us and get.
Well, we get together. Our team gets together every week, and we share prayer requests and needs across our team. And some of those are the kinds of needs that we don't mind sharing with a whole group of people. Some of them are more private, and occasionally all of us individually will be aware of things that we don't share openly, but we will be praying about. We want to give that invitation to any listener in our audience, and it's easy to do. Sign on for this podcast, you see right there some ways to contact us. All of those work, but you can also email us at worship@lifeway.com, and that email comes to us. And if it needs to get to me, that it will get all the way to me, because the team knows that I'm very interested in those kinds of things. So we'd encourage our people to connect with us every way they can, to ask questions, to make comments, and maybe somebody could share something on this subject that we could share with the whole audience later. We'd be thrilled if somebody's been out there and walked this road a little further than somebody else has. We'd love to gain the perspective that they've earned along that way and share it with our listeners. So we sure hope folks will take time to do that.
Absolutely. And when you're on iTunes, please be sure to rate the podcast, to review the podcast. That's one of the best ways we have of getting the important conversation about worship to an even larger audience. We know that God has called us to serve His church, and that the church isn't a location or a building, but it is the body of His people.
That's true.
So if you guys will get on there and rate and review, also send us your questions, please. We want to be talking about topics. We want Mike to be talking about topics that are important to you, that are current, and that are relevant. And as always, we want to thank you for joining us this week on Worship Life with Mike Harland. We'll be back again in 2 weeks, where we're going to be talking about, speaking of different styles, Mike, we are going to take on the very controversial topic, at least based on your responses to your blog, of the organ in congregational worship.
Boy.
Oh, yes. Johann Sebastian Bach is shivering in his grave right now. We'll be discussing that in 2 weeks. Worship Life with Mike Harland. Please come back and join us, won't you?
I'll see you then.